This feeling made itself felt again in spirit life. Just as I was crossing an open field, I became aware that someone was treading closely upon my heels. Turning around, whom should I see but my old friend Mr. H, eagerly watching and following me. Although he had been a very old man when he died, he now appeared young. But I had no difficulty in recognizing him. Strangely enough, he still wore his customary grey sack suit. As soon as I had recognized him, I quickly and with determination turned my head, quickened my steps and walked straight ahead. However, this snub of mine did not seem to deter him, because he kept following me. So it went on for quite a while. Finally, I crossed over into a garden where I sat down on a bench, thinking that my unwelcome companion must now be quite ashamed of himself, and that he would leave me. But I was mistaken. He walked right to the bench and took a seat on the other end. Bending forward, and with eyes twinkling, he looked me full in the face, evidently intent on making me regret my coolness and probably hoping that I would condescend to speak to him. But this appealing action of his did not soften my mood. I sat cold and indifferent as a statue. At last he began to speak. "We were well acquainted and friendly in earth life, why can't we continue amicably here?" But without deigning to reply, I rose up haughtily and walked away with grave dignity. For a while my friend followed me, but soon I discovered that he had disappeared. I met and recognized a woman spirit who on earth had been a royal queen of modern times. She had enjoyed much power and wide popularity in earth life. Her present life contrasted drably with her former existence. Although her aura was of a fairly bright hue, she had adorned herself in the simplest possible way with a kind of shroud which covered her head and body. How different from her royal splendor on earth! She walked around in seemingly stunned bewilderment, ignorant of having passed over. Her power was gone and no attention was paid to her. She simply could not understand her present predicament. Her state of mind seemed so confused and dazed that thinking was impossible. She did not notice me. I simply watched her for a while out of curiosity. In strong contrast to the appearance and condition of this royal personage was the bearing of another queen who on earth had been greatly beloved for the kindness and generous deeds which had filled her long life. I met her in that palace where she had always lived. She had stayed there until now because, as I understand it, she had evidently not yet completely disassociated herself from her past life of well-soft-doing. She confided to me, "There is some little work yet I could have liked to have done, and I am sorry I did not get it finished." It was delightful to be near such a lovely spirit. Her aura was very bright and she was clad in a pure white dress of beautiful design. I had the feeling that this noble spirit would not stay much longer there, but that she would gravitate to the spirit regions where she would fit in better and where she would be given opportunity to continue her noble work, thus furthering the development so well started in earth life. I received a different impression from the appearance of her husband, the former king, who came into the palace while I was with her. His aura was not bright. Indeed, it tended to be tent dark. He was dressed in a frock coat with striped trousers. He did not seem to realize fully the conditions under which he lived. He carried himself with royal dignity and seemed rather surprised to see me with his queen. The one thing that he instinctively realized was evidently the benefit which he might derive from association with the lovely spirit that was once his queen. But in a kind yet firm manner, she refused him the privilege of staying near her. With seemingly wounded dignity, he went from us with heavy steps, and soon I left the presence of the former queen. A terrible state of mind was evidenced by the spirit of a young boy who on passing sneered at me. "I will split your head open and let out your brains," he said, casting a frightful, malicious look upon me. This boy had just passed over in the midst of awful crimes. He still believed himself in the flesh and evidently wished to continue his devilish pleasures. His color was very dark. Fortunately, the laws governing spirit life restrain one spirit from promiscuous interference with another spirit. If such were not the case, this boy would have carried on his fiendish crimes in the spirit world as well as on earth. The following incident was extremely interesting to me because I actually witnessed the personality pass in and out of the physical body in question several times and finally leave it. Mr. G. was well known to both my husband and myself, although it could not be said that we were on friendly terms with him. He was a man who indulged liberally in liquor, a failing which mastered him time and again. Through some special trouble not necessary to state here, he lost his head completely and started a career of drink and dope to which he finally succumbed. On the night he died, I happened to be out in my spirit body. Passing his home, I went in. In the bed lay Mr. G. in terrible convulsions caused by an overdose of dope and liquor. Beside his bed stood two men who, I knew, were also trying to do something for him. This was later verified through the effort of my husband. Suddenly I saw Mr. G. rise up in his astral body and step out entirely from his physical counterpart. At once he started an eager and thorough search all around the bed for a half-soft hyphen-filled bottle of whiskey and a small bottle of narcotics which he had secreted. He found them and endeavored to lift them to his mouth. Failing in this, an expression of chagrin spread over his face. Then he went up to his body and swiftly he connected with it once more. In a short while he again stepped out of his mortal form only to go through the same performance. This he did several times, and it was strange to observe that every time he left his body it became still in death, and that as soon as he connected with it, it writhed in fearful convulsions. Finally he came out for the last time, and just as he started to look for the bottles again he suddenly caught sight of me. Straightening up he looked me full in the eyes with an expression of stupefied surprise. Then turning away, he staggered out of the house completely confused in his mind and ignorant of the fact that he had left behind his physical form which he was never to inhabit again. It was significant that each time that he stepped out of his body his aura instantly covered him with a dress similar to a sack suit he always wore. But it was of brown color, denoting the lack of any spiritual development. Mr. R., a young spirit who on earth had been a well-soft hyphen known actor, seemed perfectly happy and blissfully ignorant of having passed over. He was dressed in a fashionable greyish sack suit with the same fastidious care which characterized his costume in earth life. As he came towards me he began an elegantly exuberant tango, waving what appeared to be a beautiful flower in his hand. This he had evidently picked, as he thought, from his own estate. As he danced past me he even looked me full in the face and lavished upon me a most delightful smile. Turning, I watched him disappear in the distance in great haste. Wondering to what destination he was heading at that speed, I decided out of curiosity to follow him. Presently we were in New York City, and straightforward he went to a well-soft hyphen known night cafe which he had frequented when in the flesh. Entering, B placed himself at a table, crossed his legs and nonchalantly began a survey of the guests present while at the same time he endeavored to attract the attention of one of the waiters. There were present a good many mortal guests and quite a few spirits, some of them seated at tables. A couple of them were standing behind the chairs of some mortals resting their elbows on their shoulders. And one woman spirit had perched herself on top of the piano. I had taken a seat in a corner where I could better observe Mr. R., who kept turning his head, eyeing everybody, and still waiting to be served. Having satisfied my curiosity, I now rose to depart when suddenly Mr. R. caught sight of me. Evidently my looks must have pleased him, for with a smiling face he came rushing over to me, and in a boyish enthusiasm he quickly enfolded me in his arms. Just as indignant at such an impertinence as I would have been in the flesh, I tore myself free and hastily left the place. Highly significant was the following encounter with a spirit who found life in the spirit world entirely different from what she had expected. I had been well acquainted with Miss W. I had liked her very much and felt much grieved at hearing of her death. On one of my astral journeys some time after her decease I was drawn by a strange power towards the house where she had lived. I entered it, passed up the stairway and went into the room that had been her bedroom. There reclining on a couch I found my former friend. She gave me a recognizing glance, but otherwise she evidenced no sign of animation. It did not take me long to discover that she was in a fearfully depressed and dejected mood. Filled with much sympathy for her, I advanced to her side and, placing my arm around her shoulder, I inquired concerning the cause of her troubles. At this she broke down entirely. Dropping her head on my shoulder, she gave herself up to bitter grief. After a while she slowly gained control of herself, and in a halting manner she began to relate to me that she had just come to the realization that she had passed out of earth life. With this came the shocking discovery that life in spirit world was not at all what she had expected or what she believed it would be. Furthermore, through knowledge already gained by experience and from information volunteered by more developed spirits from whom she had inquired, she found herself ill-prepared to tackle the problem of that life. She discovered that she was almost totally lacking in the development of those very qualities needed for advancement. She found herself all alone, facing a life of stern realities where everyone carries outside oneself, in full view, the evidence of his or her spiritual qualities and exact state of development in the color emanated. To add to her distress, she now could see that all her friends of earth life had been false. Not a kind thought from them had followed her, and in her bitterness she blamed them to an extent for her sad predicament. "I hate them all," she exclaimed, for she had a great many friends and had been very popular. With their false and lying flattery they helped to mislead me. Not knowing just what to do to be of help to her, I exclaimed impulsively, "Well, W, don't you know how much your mother loves you and how much she grieves for you?" "Yes," she replied wearily, "she is not to be blamed for this. But, what of all the others?" And then she relapsed into her former silence and gloom. With no further response from her, I kept on talking, advising her as best I could. I told her that by setting herself right and by study and by hard work she could develop herself, and thus she would eventually succeed and be happy. However, my advice did not seem to be of any avail. But my friend seemed to be benefited by the sympathy I had shown, a sympathy she knew to be genuine. Rising from the couch, she placed her head on my shoulder and I threw my arm around her waist as if to support her. In this manner we slowly descended the stairway, left the house, and soon we parted, she seemingly as despondent as when I first found her. The length of time which some spirits spend on earth was effectively demonstrated to me by the following rather humorous episode. I was visiting in New York City, and one night just as I was on the point of going to sleep I became conscious of a strange sensation. It seemed as if someone was fingering my hair, or rather, as if an electric apparatus giving off a slight current was being moved all over my scalp. I quickly fell into the condition usual to me when I was about to leave my physical body, and immediately I stood on the floor beside it. To my great surprise, I saw the whole room filled with Indian spirits, all dressed in their customary garb of 200 or 300 years ago. They had been attempting to scalp me, according to their usual custom. Now in the astral, on the same footing with them, I took advantage of my superiority over them spiritually to order them to leave the room as quickly as possible. They obeyed instantly. In a helter-skelter fashion they tumbled out of the room, and building gesticulating vigorously while they angrily swore and cursed at the white man. They talked so rapidly in their own dialects that they sounded like a whole army of geese frightened by some strange occurrence. Although they spoke in their own language, I understood perfectly what they said, because as soon as one is in the astral one becomes a linguist. One understands perfectly any language spoken on earth. Curious to know where all those Indians would go, I followed them. The way led downtown and into the center of what is now called the Roaring Forties. There, into the basement of one of the theaters, they all went. I stepped into the place. It was packed with these spirits squatting or lying on the floor or standing up, all excitedly taking part in what I assumed to be a war council. On the walls of the basement of this theater, in the men's smoking room, I depicted scenes of Indians and early settlers of Manhattan, conferring and dealing with each other. I learned later that the site of the theater I have mentioned marked the spot where an early Indian tribe had pitched their camp. These Indian spirits had haunted the earth now for almost 300 years, and they believed even yet that they were still in earth life and that they were ill soft hyphen used by the white man. That is what I understood from their conversation. They were angry because the pale soft hyphen face had taken every bit of Manhattan away from them. Frantic in their wrath, they started out regularly to scalp somebody. So if the patrons of this theater should at any time, providing they are touchy, feel a queer sensation in their hair, they will know the reason. Now let me tell you of one of the strangest incidents in all my astral wanderings on Earth. One of the recent presidents had died. The whole country had taken a special interest in all the news pertaining to his death and funeral. This aroused in me a strong desire to know how he might feel in the spirit body. So upon the first occasion when I left my physical body, I headed straight for the White House. Instead of immediately finding the spirit of the recently deceased president, as I had expected, to my surprise I came across the spirit of a president who had departed this life more than 100 years ago. He had been one of the first executives of this country. He appeared to be a stately, aristocratic soft-hyphen-looking personage, fastidiously dressed in the height of the fashion of his time with knee breeches, silk stockings and buckled shoes. His elaborately embroidered waistcoat was half concealed by a delicate lace ruche which fell from the collar of his coat. He was seated in a huge chair, cross-soft-hyphen-legged, conversing with his wife who 13 sat in front of him. She was also garbed in a highly fashionable attire. A long wide skirt fell from a wasp soft-hyphen-like waist and tight soft-hyphen-fitting bodice. Her hair was done high on her head. Her every movement was marked with the exquisite grace and refinement of the aristocrat. As I passed through the room the old president looked at me with cold hauteur, a glance of mingled annoyance and of curiosity, as if he resented my intrusion and questioned my purpose. But my presence was speedily ignored by the old president and his wife, as still another spirit entered the room, that of the recently deceased president. He seemed in a perfect daze. I could judge from his stupor that he was absolutely unaware of what had actually happened to him. He seemed unable to reason or to think clearly. He evidently tried, with great effort, to collect his thoughts that he might comprehend his predicament. He could not understand why strange visitors were present without his invitation. But the tense situation did not last long, for the old president now rose slowly to his feet. Advancing a few steps, and assuming an authoritative air, he placed himself directly in front of the newly arrived president. Without any display of ceremony he addressed him, "Well, I am not going so far as to order you out of here. You may stay until you find yourself, but after that you must depart." However, this abrupt greeting of the old president did not seem to ruffle the newly arrived spirit, probably because he seemed unable to understand clearly what was going on about him. After this spirit had left the apartment, the old president condescendingly confided, "I do not like this spirit and I have never liked the way in which he ran the country." Then he turned and left the room. Sizing up the situation quickly, I realized that this spirit couple had been bound to the White House all these years and had prevented themselves from advancing simply because their minds had been and were still securely linked to that environment where they in the flesh had enjoyed so much power and glory. They were jealously regarding everything which had been and was even yet happening in that famous place. Until they develop a more idealistic conception of existence, they will remain in their old limited environment. Yet they were guilty of no great or malicious wrong. They were earthbound simply because of their low ideals. I might recount many more such conversations which I had with newly arrived spirits. But I think that I have presented sufficient material to give the reader a clear idea of the state of mind, of the ideals, and of the conduct of those spirits who are in the first stage of their new life. As the reader has already seen, the time spent by the spirits on earth before they gravitate to the sphere of spirit life varies greatly. Before taking final leave of the earth, they all hover about their old environment. For those generously endowed with highly developed spiritual qualities, the period of transition to large attainments is short. Others less developed are chained more firmly to the interests of their old life. But the majority of spirits remain earthbound for protracted periods because they are unaware that any change has taken place. Some faintly suspect an alteration, but they refuse to acknowledge it because of their love for all that which savors of the past. There are many, also, who return from the spirit abodes to spend more time on the earth because they have made no progress there. To the earth return also numerous evil spirits who find their larger fields for their insidious practices. These spirits of evil become more or less permanent residents. Counteracting the malefactions of these zealous evil spirits, there is a great army of highly developed spirits who constantly pass and repass between the spirit realm and the earth on errands of mercy. These spirits constitute the army of the good. The good and the evil spirits are continually at war, and 14 each struggles for domination over the human race. Thus the spirit population of the earth is greater than the mortal population, and its life is as cosmopolitan and multifarious. The places where the spirits journey after leaving the earth are great spheres or planes arranged in a descending order of development. Each of these planes is an independent world of enormous dimensions. I do not know how many such worlds actually exist, for I have never penetrated farther than the fourth. To the first of these planes all spirits eventually gravitate. As far as I can perceive, this plane is situated in close proximity to our solar system. In my travels to these spheres and in space, it was necessary for me to be accompanied by a guide. As soon as I passed from my physical body ready to go on these journeys, a guide, always the same individual, was by my side. What interest this spirit guide may take in me, or what laws govern his guidance, I do not know. But he is always at my right hand, he directs my way, and from him comes my knowledge of the realms we visit. He carefully fixes the time for my return to my body, lest an absence too prolonged should make return impossible, and lest death of the body should ensue. It is as if a current of mysterious influence united astral and physical body, a current which gradually weakens as the period of absence from the physical body is prolonged. My guide is a figure of much stateliness, tall and well soft-proportioned. He is dressed somewhat in the fashion of the old Roman nobles, in a tunic reaching to the feet. He is distinguished by an air of great authority, recognized wherever he goes. He calls me Carolo for Carolyn. The first spirit plane my first visit was not to the plane where spirits arrive immediately on leaving Earth, but to levels of higher life and development. What I saw there led me to ask to see the first plane, and it seems best to describe that first plane before I picture the glories of the third and fourth plane, which, as I have told you, I actually saw first. The first plane is the place of those just released from our life, where they may learn the way to higher levels, and it is also the place of earthbound souls, some of whom seemed never destined to go farther. It was when I was about to leave the fourth plane, that I asked to be taken to the first plane. All that I had seen overwhelmed me: the life of the spirits, the wonderful beauty of their surroundings, the love that governs their relations, their dignity, grace and serenity. The cry of delight that rose to my lips was stifled by a sudden thought of pity for those who knew not these glories. Where, I asked, are those spirits who may not enter here? Where dwell the evil spirits? And where do spirits first arrive? My guide answered, "You shall see." In a moment we were speeding through space, through endless voids of darkness. The phrase "a great gulf is fixed" passed through my mind. But no word was spoken. At last light appeared in the distance, and soon we set foot in a world, dark and dull compared with the sphere I had just left, but not unlike this world in which we live, with its open country, its cities with streets and buildings, and its life moving in familiar paths. This similarity, I learned, was due to the fact that many of the newly arrived spirits are still ignorant of their mortal change, and strive to continue their wonted, habitual, activities, until they are disillusioned by the failure of their hollow pursuits. Everything at first conspires there to confirm this mistake. Even the light, though brighter than on Earth, is not so bright as to dispel the illusion. I found myself in a city of gigantic size, its streets running between continuous buildings in seemingly endless lines, save where they led onto great open squares. The traffic was denser than in any earthly city. Throngs of spirits hurried past in every direction. Multitudes and more multitudes of them pushed by the spot where I had stationed myself. They were, I learned, newcomers. They seemed to me confused, disturbed, endlessly seeking. On their faces I read bewilderment, agitation, and vague desire as if they were set upon reaching an uncertain goal. Most of them, still unaware they had left this earth, were seeking to discover why they were suddenly surrounded with strangers in a city like any earthly city, yet somewhat more than strange. Puzzled surprise, wonder, distress, incredulity, and a dawning apprehension, peered from these passing faces. A few who understood or suspected their state sought only confirmation and to reach their destination, as yet unknown. All were dressed as on Earth, for the aura from the astral body, shaped by the spirit mind, clothes the spirits with the familiar vesture of Earth, and these newcomers were still completely governed by the ideals of their former life. So the multitudes of beings, dressed as on Earth, moved by the purpose of Earth, pressed through the streets lined with houses of all kinds and for all purposes as in an earthly city. The action of the surging throng seemed earthly too. The many newly arrived spirits evidenced their desire to pursue their life as they had pursued it in the past. Most of the spirits come to the realization that they are no longer on the earth only by continued disappointments, which gradually destroy the values they have been accustomed to place on earthly things. Thus this plane seems as a kind of clearinghouse for the newly arrived. Those most highly developed spiritually on Earth pass almost directly to higher spheres, others less developed but anxious to advance prepare for advancement by intense training under the guidance of spirits from higher levels who have voluntarily chosen the task of helpers. Finally they linger here, perhaps permanently, the earthbound souls, those whose minds are open only to desires and influences of Earth. Having no wish for spiritual development, those also who deserve the characterization of the lady in commerce, thou art not fit to hear thyself convinced. The different classes of spirits on this plane live in separate places, and the spirit helpers see that no class mingles with and hampers any other class. These helping spirits are to be seen everywhere and are easily recognized, for their aura envelops them in a ball of white light which indicates their high spiritual state. They are commanding, yet sympathetic figures, whose faces reveal their spiritual qualities. All are clad in long white robes reaching to the feet. The men usually wear a form of tunic, and the women a simple but very feminine dress with a head covering which flows down the back to the bottom. The duties of these helpers are manifold. They are always ready to help, whether it be in the way of instruction, or of giving strength, encouragement or sympathy, or by performing any of the deeds that spring from the pure spiritual love which fills their minds. No cry for help or assistance goes unheeded by them, but neither is their help or work forced upon anyone. In that world as here everyone is left free to carve out his own destiny. Before assistance can be given, the seeker must possess a sincere desire for improvement in terms familiar to us on Earth. Self-soft-mastery, truth, justice and principally pure spiritual love, those are the qualities of character on which rests the life of the higher spheres. Gain in these qualities here is gain there. Mere intellect, culture, and knowledge are of no value except to give those higher virtues force, and to advance them to a greater effectiveness which ripens into the fruit of higher responsibility, service, and authority. To this end new spirits must direct their efforts and prepare 16 themselves for the progress they desire into the sublime life of higher spirit worlds, ere they are directed and assisted on their way. A large proportion of the spirits dwelling on the first plane are those who are struggling by hard and sincere effort to raise themselves to a higher level, to master the ideas that prevail in more advanced spiritual states, and to conform to newly soft-formed ideals. But there are also many who have no desire so to improve and indeed no comprehension of what improvement means.